authors Nigel Melikan, James Norwood Pratt, Maria Uspensky, and Shabnam Weber are among the world's foremost tea authorities. Melikan is a global tea scientist and innovator living in Ireland. Pratt, who authored The Tea Lover's Treasury in 1982, is the beloved tea historian and America's tea sage. Maria Uspensky, founder of The Tea Spot in Denver, Colorado, is the author of Cancer Hates Tea. And Shabnam Weber, president of the Tea and Herbal Association of Canada, headquartered in Toronto, is an accomplished retailer and tea educator who created the Tea Sommelier program. Thank you, Maria and Shabnam, for joining me on the Tea Biz podcast. I must say at the outset that the four authors of this book, all of whom I know well, have produced a beautifully crafted guide that distills the world's vast tea heritage into 101 essential cups. I know and have tasted many of these teas, and thanks to your shared wisdom, I intend to try them all.
Just having someone whom we respect as the colleague in the industry say these kind of things to us, I can't tell you how that built me up on this Friday morning.
When you say to someone, "Wow, I just tried this amazing tea," you should try it. It increases demand. It encourages premiumization. It builds a genuine enthusiasm for tea, right? So let's start our discussion, Shabnam, by describing what you had in mind when you first decided to write this book.
We've written a book that I think in our minds would appeal to those people that know tea already. But I think even more than that, what we had in mind was to appeal to people that perhaps are dabbling in tea, want to know more about tea, are exploring. I think that one of the terms that I used quite often when, you know, we had sort of our authors meetings was this book needs to meet the consumer, or in this case, the reader, wherever they are in their tea journey, right? So, and we've been really careful and cognizant of being inclusive within that and not too niche, not too premium, not too much of anything, if you know what I mean. As Shabnam pointed out, this book really is for the tea curious, and then kind of secondarily, it's for the grandmother or best friend or teacher of the tea curious, right? So anyone who might be intrigued by tea, everyone knows a tea lover. You pick it up, it feels good. It's gorgeous. It's a nice layout, good quality pages, nice photography, and it's just a pleasant book to leaf through. One thing that I do want to mention about the book that's really important is, first of all, this is not the only 101 teas. We're not excluding anybody. There are teas, you know, I challenge people to actually sit down and narrow down their teas to 101. It's much harder than you think it is because there's so much you want to put in that actually doesn't end up in. The teas that are in this book are in no particular order. And that's another really important thing to mention. So what is labeled as number one doesn't mean that this is the number one tea for us in 101, et cetera. And that's the other thing that I really love about this book is that you can read the book from front cover to back cover. You can start from the back and go to the front. You can go in the middle and read chapter by chapter. Each chapter could actually be a standalone. So it's a, you know, again, it can meet you wherever it is that you are. If blending teas or blended teas and flavored teas, if that's the only thing you're interested in, then you're going to find information here.
One thing I loved about this book is the way it presents tasting notes. They're approachable. You don't get those over-the-top lines like subtle hints of anise or a whisper of sandalwood. Descriptions like that can lose people. Instead, you get these wonderfully human moments, like Nigel Melikan saying, "I drank British tea until I moved to Ireland. Now I drink berries." That one line tells you everything. And when he goes on to describe what makes berries gold blend so good, the brightness, briskness, and golden color of Rwandan tea balanced against the malty depth of Assam, you suddenly get it. You can taste it. That's what makes this book so powerful. It connects expert knowledge with real experience, and it brings tea down to earth in the best possible way.
those tasting notes being the most approachable, let's say, aspect of it. It's where our personalities get to come through. And it's very clear that we come from different angles.
Right.
And that you, which I hope then the reader would make the connection of, oh, that's fine. I may not have this heady image of this tea that this gentleman Norwood does, but I can relate to what Shabnam is saying about wanting to have this tea midway between breakfast and lunch or whatever. And that's the type of tidbits that we hope will get people interested enough to step out of, let's say, their normal repertoire and try something a little bit different.
And the tasting notes was that we didn't always necessarily agree. So in some cases, one of us actually didn't like the tea, and that was included. And I think that that was important as well.
World-famous Syrahs are mentioned, but the book does not dwell on the most expensive, most lauded teas.
You know, best is a very subjective word, and that is not something we wanted to touch at all, because, you know, what your idea of best is may be very different than my idea of best, etc. So, you know, I think that what we all in the tea world, what we all love about tea is how nuanced it is and how different a black tea from five different regions is going to be. And that really speaks to the fact that there is something out there for everybody, depending on what you like, right? I mean, you know, pigeonholing and saying that this is the only place that you must drink tea from is very exclusionary. And I think we do ourselves a great disservice within the industry to operate within that mind frame.
The way that I look at it is, of course, terroir feeds into how a plant is going to grow in a particular place, and you certainly can't get a tea leaf to taste one that's grown in Colorado the same way as it would in Japan, right? As an extreme. However, I view global origins perhaps more as a reflection of cultural tastes. So, for instance, Chinese green teas have a very, very different taste profile than Japanese green teas. And those two evolved based on cultural taste preferences. I'm not an expert taster, and I can't tell you which side of the mountain this tea came from, whether it was the leeward or the windward, or whether it was the north end of the province or the south. To me, it's those more marked differences in styles of tea that then influence what the origin is growing based on people's palates in those regions. And to me, that's the most fascinating thing about tea, are really the cultural elements that shaped each tea from each region, from each village, from each origin.
There's a lot of conversation about how we need to bring new people to tea. Was there thought given to how to make the book appealing to young tea drinkers, old tea drinkers, and new tea drinkers?
Maria will tell you that I kept saying we need to think about who our audience is, right? I want to see this book on my neighbor's bookshelf.
Yeah.
I would love it if it's on the bookshelf of people within this industry and within this world of tea. That's great. But I think the bigger success for us is that this book is on the, you know, the guy across the street who is not a tea drinker or wasn't a tea drinker. That to me is where I want to see this.
But absolutely, Shabnam. That's brilliantly said. And that is the goal. It is not going to sit on a tea person's shelf, or it could. It doesn't need to. A very experienced tea person doesn't need this book. However, anyone outside of that rarefied top of the pyramid does need this book and will enjoy this book. And this is the book that's going to open the world of tea to those who aren't reading any of those tea industry books. This is truly a tea and coffee book for the coffee table. You know, no pun intended.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.